Okay, so the title of the talk is Cancer, Stem Cells, and Tissue Architecture, a Modeling Approach. And it's really two topics that I would like to address, which sound similar but are quite different. The first one is stem cells and cancer, and the other one is cancer stem cells. And we'll see how much time I have. So the first one really has to do with a mathematical way of thinking about tissue, how it's organized, and what kind of optimization processes may be going on to shape tissue the way it's shaped. So in this part of the talk, I'll talk about different types of homeostatic control. Then I'll introduce cancer and discuss three different models, mass action, spatial, and hierarchical models. And so the main question that I ask here is which type of architecture is optimal from the point of view of mutation accumulation. So if you want to control against cancer, what's the best way to organize a tissue? I'll comment about cancer and aging later. So homeostatic control. A tissue maintaining a certain number of cells is said to exhibit a degree of homeostatic control. Basically, the organs don't grow spontaneously after the stage of development is over. In this context, cancer can be thought of as a loss of this control because it grows. So how can homeostatic control be maintained in healthy tissue? There are three types of models, very simple logical models that I'm going to present: mass action, spatial, and hierarchical structure of tissue. So which one of them is the most desirable from the point of view of cancer prevention? So here's how it goes. Let's suppose we have a bunch of cells in a tissue, and they undergo some sort of renewal. And let's suppose we don't know anything about biology. So how can we envisage the process of renewal? The simplest thing is the following. One cell is chosen, it dies, and to maintain the constant population size, it has to be replaced by a different cell. So this cell dies, and it's replaced by a daughter cell that comes from this one. And then another cell is chosen for death, and a completely different cell somewhere else is chosen for reproduction, like this. So this process can keep going, and this is actually what mathematicians often use. This kind of model is what is often used to model, the dynamic equilibrium of tissue, the self-regeneration of tissue. Something dies and is being replaced by something else, and we don't worry about space here. A cell can die here, and it could be replaced by something here. I suppose perhaps in liquid tissues, this could not be too far-fetched, but definitely not in solid. So this is what we call mass action. And the process is a famous mathematical process called Morand process, and the mathematics of this has been well studied. Now, how about space? A more realistically looking model is the following. We kill a cell somewhere, and it creates a hole here, which is replaced by, which is replenished by a new cell that comes from somewhere in the neighborhood, like this. So a cell dies, and then one of the neighboring cells senses the vacuum, and it's urged to proliferate and replace its offspring at the spot where this one dies, like this. Okay. So this is a generalized Morand process. It has not been studied too much, but it's an obvious generalization of the previous one. And finally, hierarchical structure, which is what we know really takes place in, for instance, epithelial tissues. The cells are not all the same. They're not all equal to each other. There's a special cell called stem cell, okay? And it gives rise to proliferating cells, differentiating cells, which eventually give rise to fully differentiated cells. And the process of renewal here looks like this. The fully differentiated cells die, okay, which means that there's some need to for the tissue to be replaced. So the previous generation proliferates, places itself there. There is a hole here. Now these cells, the previous generation proliferates like this, and finally the stem cell divides in an asymmetric fashion, like the previous speaker mentioned, And here we are, the process complete. So again, like this. Okay. And so this is what seems to happen, for instance, in colon and other epithelial tissues. So the naive question is, why is that? Why is it not done in another way? I showed you three possible logical ways of doing this. Why is this one the preferred one? If the population of cells is entirely homogeneous, there is no difference between the three processes. There is nothing that is better about the hierarchical structure than about other ones. However, things change if we think about mutations and if we think about cancer. In a tissue, mutations happen according to a mutation selection diagram. So a couple of previous speakers noted, for instance, the Fogelstein diagram of colon cancer initiation. So this is a mathematical way to put it. There's a healthy phenotype, or something happens, it becomes something else. And we can talk about the mutation rates and also fitnesses, according to Dr. Gatenby, that also play a role here. Or more realistically, it's something like this, really, when we have a healthy cell and many different mutations happen and there are many different pathways to cancer. Okay, so when cells proliferate, inevitably there is always a chance that something goes wrong at one of the cell divisions, and this may eventually take the tissue down the pathway and create a cancerous phenotype. So what we want to do is we want to think about those processes of cellular turnover and see which one of them is the best for us, which one is protects us in the most optimal way from accumulating mutations. I'm not going to talk about complicated networks like this, but rather I will concentrate on tumor suppressor genes. That, again, has been mentioned before. It's very convenient to be the last speaker because all the background has been set for me. So tumor suppressor genes is one of the two main things that happen in cancer. APC, retinoblastoma, P53 are common examples. In healthy cells, tumor suppressor genes exist in two copies, like all genes, and so both copies are there to prevent, well, naively speaking, they are there to prevent bad things from happening. So let's suppose that I inactivate one of these copies. Let's suppose a mutation happens that eliminates or modifies one of the copies of the tumor suppressor gene. Then the other one is still there. And so the gene product produced by this is more or less enough to prevent those bad things from happening. So in order to eliminate this gene, in order to mutate this gene fully, we really need to have two molecular events or epigenetic events, two consecutive steps. First, the first one of the copies has to be inactivated, and then the second one. And we don't have to talk about mutations. Gene silencing also, can inactivate these copies. The mathematical part about this is that we need two steps to go from a healthy cell to a cell with a modified phenotype. In the classical tumor suppressor gene, this intermediate genotype with one inactivated copy acts just like a normal cell. Nothing happens here. So really, in order to start a cancerous process, both copies need to be mutated. And we will, yeah? Oh, right. So these numbers in brackets are fitnesses of proliferative potentials of each genotype. And they're all evaluated relative to the healthy phenotype. So we can say that this is equal to one, really. Or sometimes we can think of it as less than one. So this divides as often or dies as often as this one. And this is this has a large fitness. So this is the bad transformed phenotype that proliferates faster. So that's what it means. Let's suppose we, given that very simple two-step selection mutation diagram, which corresponds to the inactivation of a tumor suppressor gene, we will assume a constant population with a cellular turnover in each of the three models, mass action, spatial, hierarchical, okay? And we will describe mathematically, I won't go into too much math here, but I can describe mathematically birth-death process with mutations, and we calculate the probability and timing of mutant generation. We'll see which tissue architecture protects you the best against mutation accumulation. So the question is, what is the probability that by time t, a mutant of this type has been created? Okay. So Moran process, the simplest box of cells. One cell dies, it's replaced by the offspring of a different randomly chosen cell. Okay, so one way things could go is like this. You start from tissue like this, which all consists of cells with fully functional tumor suppressor gene. And at some point, so when this undergoes cell renewal, this picture won't change, right? It will be all green cells all the time until a mutation happens. And maybe one of the cells becomes blue, one of the copies is inactivated. And maybe this gives rise to other blue cells. And eventually, it could very well happen that by stochastic, by chance, they are eliminated. Okay, so nothing happened here. We don't have a red cell. Okay, another type of process is like this. You start from all healthy cells. And a blue cell starts a colony, and if this colony is successful, in fact, it invades. So all cells become blue. They all contain one inactivated copy of the tumor suppressor gene. And then after a while, this keeps going. A turnover happens. Another mutation creates a red cell. And actually, from here, it's quite clear that it will invade because of our assumption that the fitness of this type is large. So once you have one of these red cells, it's probably going to, you know, invade because it has a different phenotype, it has a larger fitness. Okay, so this type of process we call a two-step process. You see, we start with a colony of all green cells, then it becomes at some point heterogeneous with respect to the cells with only one functional copy of the tumor suppressor gene. That's step one, and then it becomes heterogeneous with respect to completely mutated tumor suppressor gene. It looks like this. You can plot the number of cells as a function of time. At the beginning, everybody is green, so zero red, zero blues, everybody's green. At some point, a colony of blues takes over, and for a while, everybody is blue until the red starts. Okay, and this is just one type of process of one sequence of events that could happen if we take a computer and just run this process. Okay, this is a typical outcome. There's another typical outcome. We create one blue cell, which creates a few copies of itself and never reaches saturation. It never invades the whole copy, the whole colony. We never observe a colony which only consists of blue cells. But inside the subcolony of blues, a red cell appears, and we have a colony of red. So this is what they call stochastic tunneling. We never stop at this stage. We start with all green, and then we create a little bit of blue, and then reds take over. Okay, these are just two different types of things that can happen. And why do I do this? This is in order to calculate how fast, on average, a double mutant appears. This is a mathematical way. I show it in pictures, but this is the basis of a mathematical approach which helps me calculate how quickly, on average, the problematic cell appears in the colony. Okay, so I can describe it as a colony jumping from all green to all blue to all red, like this, or from all green through stochastic tunneling to all red. And I can calculate the rate of these, depending on mutation rate. And so these numbers don't mean anything, but let's just remember that we know how quickly these things happen, typically. Now we go to a spatial model. we add a little bit of realism, and now cells are situated in space. And I can analyze actually only a one-dimensional spatial model of cancer, and there are computer simulations corresponding to two- and three-dimensional systems. But so again, as before, each cell is chosen randomly for death, and it's replaced by a progeny of a neighboring cell. So now we have some space. And we do the same things, and we calculate the rates. And it turns out that this rate of stochastic tunneling is faster in this model than in the mass action model. So by adding space to the model, we actually create cancer faster. Okay, so I don't comment on this result at this point. Let's just remember this result. And now we turn to the hierarchical model of cancer. And this was inspired by some work that I did on colon cancer. And I'll give a little bit of background here before I go to the mathematics. So a colon is depicted here. If we take an element of a wall of a colon, it looks like this. It consists of folds of tissue, which are called crypts. Each crypt is a unicellular tissue, like this. And it consists of different types of cells. At the bottom, it is thought that stem cells reside, which replenish the tissue, and they are characterized by asymmetric division. A little bit above, there is a proliferating compartment where the cells divide symmetrically. And at the top, there are differentiated cells that are fully differentiated, and they don't proliferate anymore. They die within a, so the process of replenishment takes about a week. By the end of the week, these cells undergo apoptosis, get shed into the lumen, and are replaced by the divisions in the earlier compartment. Okay, so that remember my very simple mathematical model of replenishment. It's based on exactly these processes.
So the diet is still crucial, like, or the diet is just like part of it?
I'm sure they don't die all at once, but I think the when we talk about the stochastic accumulation of mutations, you can synchronize those events, because for this particular problem, it doesn't make a difference. If you want to create a realistic picture, then yeah, you'd have to kill them not simultaneously, but go to into a more continuous process. But when you want to count mutations, when you want to count mutants, it's good enough. So for mathematicians in the audience, the process that I described to you that is inspired by this is a finite branching process. Branching process is famous. I add the word finite here because in a regular branching process, this thing goes on forever. And a lot of math has been done on this. You can calculate distributions of all sorts of things. There, the difference here in the biological system is that it's finite. We only have a fixed number of generations, maybe about 10 in colon or less. So there are about 10 to the 3, 10 to the 4 cells in total here. So let's trace, let's look at the proliferation of cells here and trace mutational events in such a picture. So let's suppose the first mutation happens in a stem cell. Okay? Let's suppose there's only one stem cell here. Once this occurs, in a week, the entire thing will be mutant, right? Because within a week, the whole crypt is replenished by the progeny of the stem cell. And then the second, and remember, we're talking about the mutations of a tumor suppressor gene, two consecutive events. This crypt behaves just like a normal one, so nothing yet is wrong with this one. But this can give rise to a malignant mutation, which I denote as red. And these cells refuse to undergo apoptosis at the top of the crypt, so they accumulate and they lead to dysplasia. This is what they call dysplastic crypt. Okay, so in this scenario, I assume that both molecular events happen in one of the stem cells. As indicated by the previous talk, this is something that people often talk about. So the cellular origins of cancer are often described as something that happens in the stem cell of an organ. But as has been described very well, it's not entirely known, and some leukemias have been shown to perhaps arise in one of the more differentiated cells. So it's not clear that it has to be like this. So let's explore other scenarios. Let's suppose that the first mutation happens in one of the daughter cells, these dividing cells. Okay, and then within a week, everybody downstream from that is going to contain the mutation. And after a week, most probably this thing is gone, right? Because there are not so many cell divisions that go on here. So this very simple argument has been dominating the minds of theorists for the last 20 years or so. It's a very simple argument. It was considered to be the proof that the origin of colon cancer has to be in a stem cell. Why? Because if the cancer originates in one of the daughter cells, within a week these cells are gone and they simply don't have time to create the second mutation. Okay? So the body gets rid of those cells. They're transient. They're long enough to accumulate to get the second hit. However, if you do the math carefully, this scenario is possible. Okay. So before the week is over, another mutation may occur that leads to dysplasia. How likely is this? Not very likely. Of course, you can see that. But the reason why it may contribute to the generation of cancer is the following. There's only one stem cell here, and there are many daughter cells. So even though each individual event like this is not very likely, there are many of those things, many cell divisions, many more cell divisions that go on in this compartment compared to this. So perhaps this is all, this can take place too. So these two scenarios map very well back into the two-step process and the stochastic tunneling process that I described to you with regards to the mass action model. Remember, I told you that sometimes we go from green to everybody being blue to everybody being red. And so here in the hierarchical model, it really makes sense. First, everybody, all the cells are normal. Then if the first event happens in one of the stem cells, then everybody soon becomes blue and then red. Okay, so this is a two-step process. However, if the first hit occurs in a different in a proliferating cell, then we have the stochastic tunneling scenario. This, here we have a little bit of blue cells, which never dominate the whole crypt, but the double mutants appear here and they populate the whole crypt. So again, we have all this, and we have the same mathematics. Here, we can calculate the rate. And what we observe here is that the rate of mutant generation turns out to be slower in the hierarchical model than it is in the mass action model and the spatial model. And here's some graphs. So I put some parameters in, and it's the same for all parameter values. Depending on the mutation rate, what's the rate of cancer generation, basically. And it's the highest in the spatial model. It's intermediate in the mass action model. And it's the lowest in the hierarchical model. What does it mean? It means that the double mutants are the least likely to arise if we have a hierarchical structure of tissue. And this is the main point that I wanted to make here. So different types of homeostatic control have different consequences in the context of cancerous transformations. And if the tissue is organized into compartments with stem cells and daughter cells, the risk of mutations is lower than homogeneous populations. So this may be the reason why our epithelial tissue is organized the way it is. Most of cell divisions happen in epithelial tissues. You know that cancers of epithelial tissues are the most common ones. Why is that? Because there are too many. There are many more cell divisions that go on in epithelial tissues. More stuff is going on, more probability of mutation. So it's very important for the evolution to organize those tissues in such a way that the risk of mutation accumulation is the lowest. How to do this? Out of the three models considered, the hierarchical model with stem cells and differentiated cells is the best because it corresponds to the lowest probability of mutant accumulation. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit and tell you what else we can do with this kind of models. The question is, what are the parameters of the architecture that minimize the risk of cancer? So, let's suppose we establish that the tissue has to be organized into compartments which consist of stem cells and differentiated cells, okay, hierarchical structure. But how many stem cells per crypt? Okay, in the most extreme scenario, there is one stem cell that replenishes the whole thing, and in the other extreme, there are as many stem cells as there are daughter cells, okay, like this. So we have 16 cells here and 16 cells here, and everything in between. So it's not really known exactly how many stem cells there are in colony. They're optimal in the same sense of preventing cancer, lowering the risk of cancer accumulation, colon cancer. I can calculate the probability of dysplasia, the probability of creating this double mutant. So the probability is plotted here as a function of time. And here I show two extreme scenarios, many stem cells or one stem cell, and everything is in between. So as time goes by, the probability of developing a two-hit mutant goes to one, because if you wait for a million years, of course, it will happen. So it starts from zero, goes to one, but it goes to one in a different way. Okay, we have, for many stem cells, it's lower in the beginning and higher in the end. For one stem cell, it's like this. So, I wanted to address the question, which is the optimal solution for the tissue? But it's not. There is no clear answer here. You can see that early on, the optimum is many stem cells, because this is what minimizes the risk of cancer. And later on, the optimum is one stem cell, because this one is lower. Switches over. So if you were evolution, which one would you choose? Very good. So let's suppose the lifespan is here somewhere. Ah, exactly. So you will think the way I do as well. So everything depends on the reproductive age. And evolution, of course, wants to maximize the chance of reproduction. So what happens early in life, before reproduction, is most important. And so, of course, these curves depend on the parameters. What are the parameters here? The mutation rates, the number of cells, not much more. So if you take all the mutation rates to be within two orders of magnitude of each other, so nothing extreme, but there is a wide range of parameters, then this happens sometime in the middle of human life. This is not 2 seconds after birth, and it's not 200 or 500 years after birth. It's somewhere in between. Okay, so this is the same order of magnitude as the reproductive age of humans. And so according to this argument, the evolution would pick this one to have many stem cells. And this is an evolutionary compromise, because while keeping the risk of mutations lowest at the beginning of the life, of course, it increases the risk of cancer later on. Okay, so they say cancer and aging are two sides of the same coin. And so this is the conclusion of this part. And so, theoretically speaking, different architectural structures are possible which maintain homeostatic control. And I told you that hierarchical structure is the best to prevent from cancer. And a large number of stem cells seems to be the most evolutionary desirable solution here. So now, in the last 5-10 minutes, I will talk about something else. So this is my second topic for today, cancer stem cells. And I haven't done too much on this, but I only have one message here, and it's based on my work in leukemia, and also it overlaps with my talk the day before yesterday at the other conference. So we will talk about CML, chronic myeloid leukemia, as our model system. And I'll show you some patient data which describe the level of cancer cells in the blood. And we'll try to explain the behavior of these treated patients, both the mean and the individual variants. So here is the data. Each graph corresponds to a different patient. The data comes from the paper by Roder in Nature Medicine 2006. The horizontal axis is time. The vertical axis is some measure of cancer in the blood of CML patients. So it measures how many cancerous cells. It's related to the measure of how many cancerous cells they are. And all the patients here are treated with the drug imatinib, which is a small molecule inhibitor that seems to be more or less effective, at least at early stages of CML. And you can see that, first of all, there's a lot of difference between different patients. And if we describe this in the most naive way, that the cancerous population decays exponentially, it's truly not the case here. Note that the horizontal axis is logarithmic. So we have some quick decline at first, and then it kind of flattens out. So we don't have an exponential elimination of cells here. But somehow, first they decline quickly, and then the process slows down. And so I will try to explain this phenomenon here by using some concepts of cancerous stem cells. So this is wrong. And I used an idea that was proposed in some experimental papers a few years back. And this suggests that in CML, a fraction of cells possess stem-like properties. And as we all heard in a previous talk, one of the properties of stem cells is the fact that they may undergo a state of quiescence. So sometimes they just fall asleep and they don't proliferate they get stuck in the gnot phase of the cellular cycle, and they can come out of this, but it's a stochastic thing. So but sometimes they just undergo no divisions. And it's assumed in the model that such quiescent cells are not affected by the drug imatinib. We assume that the cycling cells are affected by the drug, but those that are in the state of quiescence are not susceptible to imatinib. So putting all these assumptions in the model, we have the following thing. So here's a cancer cell. It can do one of three things. It can divide with a given rate, it can die, and it can undergo quiescence, it can become quiescent. And these quiescent cells don't do anything, except at some point they may return back to cycling. Okay? And, I don't have the slide. So the drug imatinib kills these cells, and it doesn't kill these cells. Okay? So when we write down the corresponding system. So here, there's not much. If you were at my previous talk, I talked about various ways of stochastic modeling. Here, we don't need to talk much about those. We can just write down the equations for the averages. Okay. And this is a very simple system that everybody can just write down. We have two populations, active CML cells and quiescent CML cells. Active cells divide, die, and go into quiescence with the rate alpha. And when they go to quiescence, they appear in this population. And these cells wake up with rate beta and go here. That's it. Very simple. Okay, so obviously two linear ODEs can be solved. And we get this kind of pattern. So first, a quick decline. Again, this is an exponential, logarithmic quantity plotted here as a function of time, the total number of cancer cells. First, it declines quickly, exponentially, and then it continues to decline exponentially, but at a slower rate. It's very, very easy to understand what happens here. Let's suppose our population consists entirely or mostly of cytokine cells and a few quiescent cells. When they apply the drug stochastically kills the colony of cytokine cells because they respond to treatment. So once all the cytokine cells are killed, this process stops, and all we have is those cells that are quiescent. So now, in order to kill those, we have to wait until they wake up. So that makes it a lot long. This process a lot longer. So the sleeping cells have to first wake up before they're killed by the drug. So it's a simplified explanation, and there are several different regimes here, but this is what goes on here when the parameters are right. Okay. So this helps explain the average pattern of behavior. So there are two papers, actually, that present such data. Roder, that I already mentioned, and Michur, both of them, the averages, the average measurements are plotted by these bars with, together with standard deviation, and the solid line is my formula. Okay, we can fit the average data by using that model. Very simple model, explains the biphasic behavior in a very transparent way. But what I mentioned before, I do not only want to explain the average behavior, but perhaps we can also talk about individual differences. And this is, I think, a more important point here. Because if you, again, go back to the simple equation that I showed, this is a typical outcome, a biphasic decline. But there are two other qualitatively different outcomes that are possible for different parameter regimes, which can be very easily characterized. One of them is a linear decline, so zero is here, this doesn't count. It just kind of declines at one rate. We don't have this biphasic mean, it just goes down. Okay? And another one is reverse biphasic decline. It starts declining slowly and then speeds up, completely different from this. And interestingly, there are patients among the, I think that together about 200 patients that whose data have been published in these two papers, and some of them, so this one, for instance, doesn't look biphasic, but it looks more or less like a linear decline. And this one, you can imagine or see, I don't know, that first it declines slower and then faster, reverse biphasic. Of course, we cannot draw any conclusions from these data because having five points is not enough to justify this model. However, this model helps you maybe think about it in these different terms. With more data, we may be able to really show that this is statistically significant, and perhaps these two different types of behavior are observable. So what do they depend on? A few measurable parameters. Death rate with respect to the growth rate of the cancer cells, that's easy, I think, more or less. Quiescence rate, the rate at which cells become quiescent, and the rate of awakening. So those are harder to measure. So whoever, the experimentalist in the audience, perhaps may have suggestions that this is something that may vary from patient to patient, and it may account for these different types of response that we get. This is the summary. Quiescence activation dynamics can explain the response of CML leukemia to imatinib treatment. And according to the model, if we treat long enough, hopefully all the cells will be eradicated. This is an optimistic outcome of this model. Alternative models suggest that cancerous stem cells don't respond to treatment at all. So in which case, you won't observe a biphasic decline. You'll observe a decline and then a comeback, which is also observed sometimes, but this may be due to drug resistance. Okay, so according to our theory, in the absence of drug resistance, if you treat long enough, you will succeed. It's just a question of waiting for those quiescent cells to wake up. Finally, our model can also account for the large difference between various patients that are observed. Thank you.